Hello and welcome to CIFAR Sounding. I'm your host, Simba Wiltz.
And I'm Asla Gonser.
CIFAR Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of the big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CIFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
You can find out more about us on our website at cflar.org.
We're also on social media. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/cflar and on Twitter at cflarbigcats.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/CFL Animal Reserve. We recently received a question regarding whether cats are ticklish and about the humor of cats. So we decided we'd dedicate a show to that very topic.
So given that it's about the cats, I suppose we should get into the question of whether or not the cats actually are.
Yes, let's talk about that.
Well, it's a bit of a challenging question, I suppose. If I were to ask you, what exactly is a tickle? What would you say?
That's a good question. I know that the sensation of something lightly touching you, for example, a spider or something crawling on you, certainly gives you a slight tickle, but it's in a negative way, and you want to push it off, or you have that instinct to swipe it off of you. But there's also obviously the tickle that ensues laughter, which I'm not sure how to explain how that happens.
We have a unique problem when it comes to tickle. Obviously, it's a sensation, so we know that feeling is involved somehow. And since it's been well established that animals have nervous systems and we have nervous systems, that there's at least a probability that the sensation of tickle can exist in other species. Now, it gets more interesting because at one point it was thought that humans were the only species that experienced tickle. In fact, it goes all the way back to Darwin theorizing that tickle had some kind of evolutionary benefit for people, something that was advantageous to us. You fast forward to the present day, and we know a lot more about tickle, and yet somehow a whole lot less.
That's interesting. So more and less at the same time.
More and less.
So that tickles the mind.
Doesn't it? Well, and some researchers have been doing some work on it, and indeed they have split it into those two major categories. You've got something called nystagmus, that is the light tickle that you described, the idea of having a spider crawling on you or an insect, and that's been shown to be present in a great number of species across the animal kingdom. That's what you may see if a fly lands on a horse and they twitch, or even smaller creature getting surprised by a light touch of an insect. But there's another type of tickle that is called gargalesmus.
And gargalesmus.
Gargalesmus. And that is actually a heavier tickle. It's the laugh-inducing tickle. And that is the one that very few creatures actually exhibit.
Well, do other creatures laugh other than humans?
Yes. You'd be surprised at some of that. Obviously, humans, and then, of course, the great apes. This is actually thought to be a holdover from the great apes.
Great apes laugh?
They do. In fact, there is quite a bit of research that's been done. People tickling the great apes, both in captivity and have observed it in the wild.
Them tickling each other?
Yes. And
okay,
according to what some researchers are showing is not only do they do it in the wild, but they do it and it never seems to get old. With regardless of age, it seems to be something that is done all up and down the spectrum.
Well, that sounds somewhat human in that regard.
Also in that pantheon of creatures that laugh, so to speak, then this one was a little surprising, rats.
Rats laugh?
Rats laugh, yes. And this turned into quite an interesting research project because what they discovered is that there are these patches, and they just kind of called them tickle patches, whereby rats would actually laugh. They'd make these ultrasonic high-pitched noises correspond to laughter. Now, how in the world can we establish that it's laughter? We're very used to what laughter sounds like, right? At least we think we are, because for humans, a laugh is, you know, considered the universal language. But in the case of these rats, it sounded very differently. But what was really interesting was the reaction of other rats to that noise.
Contagious? Do they laugh too?
There seems to be some kind of contagion. It's not a laughter contagion, but the researchers indicated that it suggested a level of joy, because the rats that were being tickled exhibited more social behaviors. They exhibited a greater willingness to perform tasks. They exhibited basically improved functioning off of this laughter.
So a tickle a day is a good thing, huh?
I don't quite think it's going to make it up there with an apple yet.
Oh, okay.
But through this experiment, it was fascinating through this experiment that they were able to create almost a surrogate that showed that these sounds and this experience was causing a decrease in stress, which is, of course, corresponding to how the laugh behaves for humans as well. And so, therefore, there could certainly be a benefit.
Is that also true of the great apes, or do you know?
The research did show that there was some benefit that happened mostly in the realm of social bonding.
And also stress relief?
Social bonding and stress relief. The most dramatic research with regards to quote-unquote tickling or laughter and stress relief was actually not in rats, but in dogs.
Oh, really?
So a dog's laugh is obviously not the same sound as a human's laugh either, but it is identifiable. It is a specific type of panting that is recognizable to other dogs as a sound of joy and laughter. And the way that this piece of research came about was they took the sound of dogs laughing and they actually played it in kennel situations, in humane societies and shelters with dogs. And what they noted was that the dogs tended to not vocalize as much. They tended to behave in a less stressed manner. And in fact, it had been suggested as a way to actually increase adoption rates, because the dogs were behaving in a manner that was a little bit more socially acceptable because they were less stressed.
That's actually very interesting. I didn't know that dogs also laughed, and that they would even cause them to have less stress amongst each other and same kinds of things. So obviously, if you can look at these things, even though we can't hear it and go, oh, that's a laugh, you're saying the other reactions, such as the reduction of stress, the more social behavior, and the fact that it's somewhat contagious to other of the species, gives you that impression that, yes, it is a laugh-type event.
Clearly, there's some communication going on. And that's what brings us back to whether or not our cats are ticklish.
Yeah, so, well, let's start with the first part of that. We've been talking about laughter. Do the big cats laugh?
Well, I'm really not sure. In order to really establish that, we would need to be able to do the kind of spectral analysis and to tell whether or not there is a specific vocalization associated with it. There are certainly activities that are associated with it, and we know that the cats experience at least the light touch, the nystemsis that we talked about before, and we've seen that in when, you know, they have a fly land on an ear and, you know, they flick the ear, they turn it all over the place trying to get the fly off, or something lands on their hip and they'll flick their tail and try and knock it off. Or even if you've got a slightly mischievous human who's walking around and playing with the tufts of fur between their toes, then they'll certainly react to that as well.
But do they react in a way that is negative, like, oh, don't do that? Or is it more of a, oh, that's kind of funny, I like that, do it again?
That's interesting too, because just like people, their reactions vary tremendously upon the context. If you've got a cat that doesn't like you, so to speak, and you walk up and you tickle their pads on their feet, then they may kind of growl at you and move their feet away or tuck them under, try and avoid the sensation because they know that you're going to do that and they don't want that. But then you get others who seem to find quite a bit of enjoyment with this. I think of some of the cats who like to lay with their paws up against the fence, and you can sneak right up to them. They will see you coming, and they'll watch you, and they'll watch you, and they'll watch you. And you can even tell them, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get those paws. And they, you know, will watch and watch. And then suddenly you grab one of the toes and give it a little tweak, and they'll pull the paw back and flick it, shake it, watching the entire time, hold it back for a couple of seconds, and then put it right back up against the fence.
Do it again.
Exactly. They're just ready for you to go again. Okay. And so then you do it again. And what's interesting about this behavior is it is very reminiscent of how people play with babies. And it's a very important bonding activity for babies because it gives them a sense of playful contact. It gives them a sense of understanding what is them versus the outside world. It also gives them the opportunity to really laugh and bond and have a good time. Now with the cats, if you think about it, the whole light touch reaction is really more a benefit of trying to get rid of an insect or to prevent something from crawling on them, whether it be something small or a snake, something that can bite them. For them to, and I should caveat that by saying, usually they might not see it. So the reaction is swift and doesn't usually elicit their attention. So for them to actually watch this interplay go back and forth indicates a little bit that there may be some enjoyment of this because they can see it coming. They know what the source is, but yet they react anyway.
And they also put the paw back up to do it again. But you can't really equate any laughter to go with that.
They can't really say that there is a sound that would qualify as cat laughter. Now, I say that with the acknowledgement that we know that laughter can be come in all different shapes and sizes. There are a tremendous number of vocalizations. And for those creatures that are more highly socialized, making noise becomes more important. So, for example, if you were to tickle a leopard, for example, I imagine that they might be less inclined to make a noise versus if you were to tickle a lion.
And because lions are social creatures and leopards are not?
Generally speaking, yes.
That makes sense. So, are there instances where you use this tickle response to your benefit for behavioral changes?
Well, sure. It's not just something that we do for fun, even though occasionally they can certainly give us some funny reactions. You know, there's tickle also has the benefit of being an attention-getting contact that is not a heavy touch. And we've talked about touch before, especially in the context of handling, how touch has to be done very carefully, very thoughtfully, whenever you're handling the cats. And sometimes you like to be able to get their attention and elicit a behavior without resorting to old school techniques of pain in order to get the cats to do something. I think of a cat like Cheyenne, who is, of course, our oldest cougar.
You said cougar, and you mentioned a specific cat.
I did.
Yes, you did. You know what that means.
15 freakishly fast fun cat facts.
Common name, cougar.
Genus and species, Puma concolor.
Subspecies, 7.
Average shoulder height, 2 to 3 feet.
Average body length, 4 to 6 feet.
Average weight, 110 to 220 pounds.
Lifespan, 10 to 20 years.
Land speed, 40 to 50 miles per hour.
Conservation status, least concern.
Native lands, North and South America.
Key physical feature, long tail and larger hind legs.
Likes solitude and jumping.
Dislikes swimming.
Jumping ability, 18 feet high, 40 to 45 feet long.
Primary diet, carnivore generalist, will eat any animal it catches, 3 to 6 pounds per day.
Cougars at CIFAR are Kukla, Cheyenne, Kekega, and Ishnatoyela.
So we mentioned Cheyenne. And with Cheyenne, what she likes to do on occasion is just sprawl out in front of you while you're working in her enclosure, wherever that happens to be. She just lays there, and sometimes it'll be right in front of a door or something along those lines. And you need her to move away so that you can do something. So sometimes it's a lot easier, instead of trying to actually get her to get up and move, it's a lot easier to take the little tines of the rake and just ever so lightly tickle the back of her paws until she eventually gets annoyed and decides she doesn't like it, and she'll shift and move somewhere else.
So at first it's maybe a little bit okay, a little bit ticklish, but eventually it's enough to like, okay, just leave me alone, I'm moving.
Yeah, at first it's okay, it's just a fly. Okay, the fly won't leave me alone. Okay, this is really starting to get annoying. I'm tired of being tickled, I'm going to get up and move.
How old is Cheyenne?
Cheyenne was born in 1996, so she is now in her 18th year.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, I think September 25th is actually going to be her 18th birthday.
That's cool. So Cheyenne will now move out of your way and allow you to continue with your activities.
Sure. This can be useful for any number of cats, especially those cats that they're trying to maintain their position and they don't want to get up because, sometimes we need them to shift and they may be in the middle of their morning nap and they are napping up against the fence. The trick is that once they get moving, they usually will keep moving. You can keep them moving in a specific direction, but you got to get them moving first. If they've got paws up against the fence, then if you tickle those paws a little bit, then eventually they'll roll up or stand up or something so that they don't have to endure it anymore. And by the time they've done so, now you're telling them, okay, now that you're up.
Might as well go into the shift.
Yep, might as well go in the shift.
So it does help you with the actual handling of the cats to utilize the ticklishness aspect.
Yeah, a smart handler is going to have a lot of different tools and techniques if you're going to be in contact with the cats, and that's certainly one of them. Now, we do know that, you know, their paws are not the only ticklish spot that has been found, and I have to wonder whether or not that they have an equivalent of gargalesis, but that we don't know of. For example, the kicking of a leg is oftentimes ascribed to a tickle sensation, right?
Yeah, and dogs do that quite often. You get them in the right spot, and you see that leg just a-going and a-going.
Right, and we've seen lots of creatures that'll do that.
Right.
The tigers and the lions, all of them, they're no exception. You can certainly find some spots, and maybe behind an ear, or it may be on the lower part of a neck, or sometimes even certain spots on the shoulder or the mid-back, that if you give it just the good scratch, that you can get a hind leg going on a couple of them.
That's probably a little more dangerous with a big cat, though, than a dog.
Well, usually this would be something that'd be done via the fence. And sometimes they even invite it.
Oh, really?
Yes, where they may be laying on top of their den and laying in the center of their den such that you can't reach them, for example. And then they may decide, okay, well, I'm just going to get up and come and lean my back up against the fence because I know that you, human with the wonderful appendages, you are a scratcher. And you're going to scratch my back, and it's going to feel good.
And it elicits that leg waggles response.
Sometimes, if you're lucky. And there is sort of this general tension that you can also feel because the leg waggle response doesn't happen in isolation. They kind of curl up into themselves, and the leg really gets going. Then sometimes they'll actually move away from it by accident and then find themselves moving back towards it again.
Do it again, right? So do they ever tickle each other, the cats?
Well, there's a fascinating question. We know that the sensation of tickle is extremely useful in the development of really any species, because if you think about it, the places that you're ticklish are going to be places that you want to protect. If you were to have significant damage to your feet, for example, you'd be at a tremendous disadvantage out in the wild because then you couldn't get around, let alone defend yourself. And of course, the same goes for other parts, you know, the belly. There's lots of internal organs that are there, important internal organs. And for humans, at least, humans and the great apes, the armpit and rib cage are protecting lungs and heart. It's a very short trip from that external zone to those organs. So there's a tremendous advantage. Now, when you think about a predator species like the big cats, a lot of their play will involve what is oftentimes described as tickle play, but may not necessarily involve the sensation.
The sensation of tickle, you mean?
Right.
So why is it called tickle play?
It's called tickle play because in many cases they are shooting for those parts. If you've ever watched lion cubs at play or tigers playing with each other, they may romp and tackle each other, and then one may put a mock bite on the other one's neck, or they might bite the other one's paws. They might go for spots that could be considered tickle spots, you know, given the anatomical equivalents, but obviously the sensation is not being elicited in the same way.
So it's just part of their play. It's not that they're trying to tickle each other.
That's the theory. Now, of course, if that same play were to take place in another species, what likely would end up happening is that the tickle elicits a social response. So if you've got, let's say you've got two kids that are playing and one pins the other one down and starts tickling his sides, for example, what that's going to force both of them to do is to figure out how to solve the problem. The problem being that there is a mock attack that is taking place on a sensitive organ. How do you respond? And the ticklee, so to speak, the one being tickled, is going to have to develop a set of skills in order to escape or avoid or learn the lesson that maybe it's not such a good idea to let them get that close. Whereas the tickler also learns the certain skills about how to elicit the response best, how to find the spots that are going to be the most effective.
So they are tickling each other in their own way, but not for the same reasons as to elicit laughter, or at least so we understand.
Well, the sensation and the response have to be separated, and that's perhaps some of the most intriguing part of this research, is that the sensation may actually cross species. However, by defining the response as laughter, then that turns it into a species-specific scenario. So it's very species specific to say tickle equals laugh, because laughter is very specific to humans and, of course, the great apes as well. But even amongst the great apes, their laughter sound is not the same as our laughter sound.
So you still have to understand what is considered laughter. Well, like we mentioned before, the dog and the rat also laugh, and clearly we don't understand when they're laughing.
Precisely. And it's that discovery of what is it that is going to stimulate that species to have the laugh response. That is likely what is being used as a surrogate for determining whether or not something is a tickle or not.
But getting back to the original premise that you mentioned, the two different types of tickle. So how do you really separate one from the other?
The separation of them is pretty much response. Like we say, all of the species, most of the species are going to have some response to light touch, because that is of value. It's an evolutionary value to be able to avoid insects and be able to feel the kind of surprises that can come from a lighter touch. But that laugh response, the hard tickle, so to speak, that's one that is a little bit more touchy, no pun intended, right?
Yeah, I'm sure the pun was intended.
Because contact in the wild is really going to come in very few forms. You've got parental contact, you've got combat contact, and then you have everything in between, the casual contacts and things like that. In order for this hard tickle to exist, that requires a certain amount of proximity, but it also requires something else.
Something else.
Something else, like, yes. So, for example, if I were to turn around and say, okay, give me your foot.
No.
And we're just going to sit this here. And we're not going to do anything, but we're just going to leave this here.
I don't think I could do that.
Yeah, because basically what I've done is I have created a bit of anxiety, haven't I?
Yes.
Because I may do something with this foot. I may not do something with this foot. And given the scope of the conversation, you may have an idea on it. Now, the one thing that you're pretty certain of is that I'm not going to kill and eat you.
I would hope not.
Yes, we can both agree on that. However, you can also agree that this is a position of vulnerability amongst a social group.
Correct.
And so there has to be a degree of anxiety that is below the level of pure fight and flight, but yet still enough that it's going to elicit a response. And that's why oftentimes you'll see tickle in play, because play is an elevated level of arousal, but not a level that is going to actually be panic.
Not leading into fighting, but leading into play fighting, as we call it.
Exactly.
C4 Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
Send us your thoughts. You can get us on email via contact@cflar.org.
Tune in again next week for more discussion. My name is Asla Gonser.
And I'm Simba Wills. Thanks for listening to CFAR Sounding.